The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Okay, great. So, what I suggest is we read over the equanimity reflections that I've handed out, which, again, are available on the website on the top for anyone who might be listening on Audio Dharma. So let's start reading one paragraph at a time. Whoever would like to start, please pick up the mic and we'll just pass the mic around. Okay. Great.
Week one, equanimity as inner balance and seeing the bigger picture. The reflection. Can you remember a time in your life when you felt present, poised, and balanced while in the midst of something exciting or difficult activity? Or can you remember a time in your life when you felt very present for what was happening and yet able to also see the bigger picture of what was occurring? How did it feel not to be caught up and lost in the activity, yet to still experience it? How did it feel in your body?
Thank you, Marcia.
Practice. During your daily meditation practice, see if you can notice any feelings of poise, balance, and evenness. If you don't experience a sense of balance, then explore what prevents you from being present and feeling equanimous with what is arisen.
Thank you.
Equanimity.
Oh, could you take the mic, please? Thank you.
Week two, equanimity compared to indifference. Reflection. Some practitioners may be put off by their ideas of equanimity, fearing that it asks us to have a cool aloofness and indifference to our experience and the world around us. What are your ideas about equanimity? And how do you distinguish it from indifference or dry neutrality?
Practice. When you find yourself in a challenging situation, apply yourself to be mindful of your body. Give attention to your posture and assume a posture which is well grounded and balanced. Explore how a dedication to being mindful of body and posture helps you to be equanimous.
Week three, equanimity as a factor of awakening. Reflection. In the list of the seven factors of awakening, seven factors or awakening, equanimity.
Oops, typo. Thank you.
So in the list of the seven factors of awakening, equanimity is last, after concentration. Why do you think this is? Do you experience a relationship between concentration and equanimity? How might these factors contribute to your spiritual development?
Practice. During your meditation practice, notice when you feel calm and settled. Then notice how balanced and poised you feel when you're calm. Also notice the relationship between feeling agitated and your body to hold experiences with equanimity.
Thank you. So what I'm really appreciating in the reflections is that reflections can actually feel even juicier, more alive when they're discussed, not just thought in your head at home. But the practices are definitely the ones that you will be noticing in your practice and observing in your meditation practice at home. But the reflections are really more, they can be more fruitful if they're shared, held witness. So the suggestion I have now, and part of me wants to explore all of them, but here's what I think would be fruitful to do. So let us get into smaller groups, so there's more time for exploring, discussing, maybe groups of three or four. Let's see how we divide. And reflect on both the first reflection from week one, which is remembering a time in your life, etc. So the first question. And then taking some time for reflecting on the second one, the difference between equanimity and indifference. And let's hold number three, the reflection, for this afternoon, because I think part of three really comes together with all the other factors, how all of them really support each other. So that's an exploration we'll do this afternoon, and bring in also this question in terms of equanimity and concentration. So let's explore the first two reflections in groups. And we are divisible by three. Let's do that. Okay, yeah, no worries. So, and I will join a group so that we are divisible by three. Was that? One person. So, that was nice, wasn't it? Oh, that was really nice. Yeah. So, a lot of things came up from the conversation in our group. It was lovely for me to be in the group also, and I'm curious what other... Well, actually, no, I'll share one thing first before I forget. But one important thing that came up from the conversation about clarifying equanimity that I want to share. And it, in our group, it came out of talking about experience of pain, physical pain, physical pain in the body. And what's really important about equanimity, the practice of equanimity, is not so much that we try to make everything be okay or go away, or get rid of them, some things. Yes, I do. Thank you for checking. I often forget. It's not so much that we try to get rid of things and kind of be, I don't know, there's not the getting rid of unpleasant, but it's the okayness. It's not attaching nor pushing away the pleasant or unpleasant or neutral or anything else that comes up. And the conversation that came up about pain, for example, in our group was, when you think of pain as this solid block, pain with a label, it's often harder for the mind to relate to it. But when there is sati, when there is mindfulness, and this could also serve an example of how the factors support each other, and when there's curiosity and interest, etc., the pain can be seen as three separate parts. One part being the sensations, the intense sensations, or sensations, bodily sensations. The second part, aspect of it being unpleasantness. The third aspect of it being aversion. I don't like it. Make it go away. And those three things being really separate constituents of what we call pain. So with the third constituent, I don't like this. I don't like this aversion. Make it go away. If we are working with equanimity, like, oh, okay, I acknowledge that I don't like this. Can I be okay that I don't like this, instead of, oh, trying to get rid of not liking the pain? You see, there is a difference. You're not trying to get rid of it. You're acknowledging, like, yeah, I don't like this. Can there be okayness? Can there be space holding that, yeah, I don't like this? And then the mind can relax and have equanimity, not push away the not liking. You see? You don't push away the not liking. You don't attach to the not liking. You don't identify than not liking. You don't become, I don't like this, make it go. It's like, yeah, I don't like it. It's just kind of like it's, you're hoping, you're holding not liking with an open hand, sort of, I don't like that. You see the difference? Similarly, when you move to the unpleasantness, unpleasant. It's just unpleasant. Yep. Unpleasant. Yep. Unpleasant there too. That muscle. Yep. That unpleasant. Not pushing it away. Not identifying. Not attaching. Like, yep. Unpleasant. It's like this. Unpleasantness is like this. Equanimity with unpleasant. Right? And now let's go to the other constituent. Sensations. Burning, stabbing, tight. Interesting. There can be interest, dhammavicaya, there can be sati, mindfulness. Neither pushing away nor identifying. Like, oh, interesting. It can even switch sometimes. It can flip. When there's a lot of interest, it can flip to become pleasant, to become joyous, to actually even become a factor of samadhi for the mind to really settle with the intense sensations. So I wanted to bring this example up and highlight it because it's really about how you're not trying to get rid of the unpleasant, pleasant, or not liking or difficult emotions, but yeah, they can be held. They can be held in the bird's eye view, in the spaciousness of equanimity. Yep. Unpleasant, yep, pleasant, etc. So I wanted to highlight this. Please. And Mike, look for a mic near you. Daryl, there's a mic over there. You can pass it.
So, a question about the pain.
Yeah.
Example, I feel like there's something else.
Yes, it is.
Something else that throws me off is with pain is when I, you know, when my knee hurts, fine, you know, it's I can go through those three.
Yeah.
But what if my mind thinks that, what if this knee pain means, I don't know, knee cancer?
Yeah,
or something horrible. Then I can't stay equanimous with it. What is that? Is that the second arrow thing?
Yes, or you know exactly what it is, my dear.
I know it, but because I do it all the time, yeah, I know it so well.
That's it. You know exactly what it is. Great, great. This is quite significant, actually. I really appreciate you bringing up the question and realizing that, oh yes, I know the answer. That's what that is. It is the second arrow. And can I see it clearly that when it comes up again, like, yep, I see you, second arrow. You're just a second arrow. You're just my mind making up stories. It's okay. It's okay. You've been seeing clearly, dear mind, of creating second arrows.
It's not just making stories. It's the investigation, like, you know, too, like, what could this be? Could it just be something that I really need to worry about? Or
See, there is a distinction. So I'm glad you brought that up. There is a distinction between wisdom and papancha. Papancha is making up stories like, oh, it could be this, and there could be cancer, and oh my God, and I have work to do, and like, you know, you're spending like, you know, papancha, what is, I mean, this the word itself, it's a papancha, it's like,
yeah.
You know, the thoughts.
So not talking burst about that, but...
Yeah, but see, make the distinction in that moment, distinction between wisdom and papancha. Is it really, okay, it could be this, then what would I do? Okay, or maybe, but actually, I don't even know right now. It's like that, probabilistically speaking, knee cancer, it probably the probability of it is one in, I don't know, whatever, right? Like, really? So is there an emotional aspect to it? Is it a worrying aspect to it? I mean, that's where you kind of bring the wisdom back, to be right here, right now. And to be right here, right now. And a lot of times, it's best to trust that if you... Because here's the thing, sometimes Papancha masquerades as wisdom. Like if I think about all the possibilities and all the various cancers and everything that could possibly be wrong in my knee, then I'll be okay. Right? I don't think that's wisdom. The wisdom will be coming back. It's okay. I trust that if the knee gets worse, and I will know what to do, and I will take the right steps. Just trust. And right now, all I need is just... Yeah, it's throbbing, it's unpleasant. That's all I need, right? And trusting that, you know, there's a sense of trust. Yeah. Yeah. So what other observations came up as you were talking in your group about equanimity as inner balance, seeing the bigger picture at a time in your life you've actually experienced it, and how did it feel in your body specifically? Also, equanimity compared to indifference and dry neutrality. Anything from your conversations, your insights you'd like to share, or questions that came up?
So, in our group, one of the things that I saw is that if you're, for example, a mother, you also have a role when something comes up. So it's not just about your experience, it's like your experience related to your child or your whoever else might be involved in whatever has arisen. And so, now I'm not a mother, but from the experiences spoken, when you are in that role, there are certain things you have to consider in your responses to a crisis, so to speak. And so there's a kind of... I wouldn't call it a priority setting, but there's a kind of, you know, it's like that, this, I don't know if it's an analogy or a simile that they use with the cloudy glass of water, you know, it's all dirty and you let it settle. And I think when you're in a, when you have a role, that process has to take place. So, you know, firstly you're all upset because you found out da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And then as the parent, you know, you have to sort of let things settle before you take action.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah.
So I just want to say I was very appreciative of the generosity of the people in my group who shared some difficult situations.
Yeah. So it's in one way that I hear what you're sharing and what happened in what came up in your group is actually what I hear is really the power of equanimity as a parent, especially relationally, allowing things to happen, allowing things to settle and have a spaciousness from which you take action. And in our groups, actually, we talked about it the other way around. Those of us who've lost our parents and have been part of the process of their passing and holding that process with all of its complexities, physically, emotionally, all of that with equanimity and space and not non-reactivity. Generationally, equanimity. Any other thoughts, reflections? I think we have one group who hasn't shared, if you wish. You don't have to.
I think the thing that came up the most was around the relational relationships that we've had between parents and children as being the stirred up glass, if you will, of stuff and having to let that settle before one actually takes action, and to be mindful of one's own state of mind. And it's really two sides of a coin. Each child has their own life pile that they need to deal with. But we were all part of an ecosystem. We're all part of we're all linked together. Just that, you know, in some ways we have boundaries of our understanding, of our emotional understanding, of our sense understanding, of our intellectual understandings. And our job is really to expand our own understandings and to help others do the same thing.
Yeah, so equanimity is supporting our equanimity, our practice of equanimity, and our practice supporting those of others and the process of others.
So it's really a two-sided coin.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's always lovely to think of it that way, right? That we're not doing this practice just for ourselves. We aren't, period. We really aren't. It reminds me of this concept of Ubuntu from Africa, that I am because of you and you are because of me, this intertwinedness of our beings. Thank you. So I wanted to share a couple more words before we break for lunch. And one is that equanimity, again, was something that came up in our group and also have in my notes to discuss. I think it's already become clear, but it's important to say that it's not giving up. It's not turning away. And that sense of care really highlights this aspect of sense of equanimity, this presence, this open-hearted presence. And some and there, as I mentioned earlier, there is a way to practice of equanimity as a formal practice, the same way that one practices metta meditation as a formal practice. May I be well, may I be happy, or may you be safe, may you be happy, etc. Equanimity is a formal practice. And there are a list of phrases. I offer a few of them here. Choose whichever works for you. May I accept things as they are, or things are as they are. Or, it's like this. Or simply, this too. This too. Another phrase that I like is, may I be undisturbed by the comings and goings of things. Another alternative is, may I be at peace. Another one is, all things arise and pass according to a lawful nature. All things arise and pass according to a lawful nature. And you can create or make the version that works for you. So just to repeat them briefly, may I accept things as they are, or things are as they are. Or it's like this. Or this too. For a time, the phrase I used was, it is what it is. It is what it is. Of course, the tone, the way you say it, not one with resignation, but like just an acknowledgement of things are as they are, because they need to be, because of the lawful nature of how things unfold. Everything that has come before, and the law of, and the Dharma, the law of Dharma, the law of how life unfolds. So practicing this formally at times, especially when things are very difficult, whatever version works for you, may I be at peace, may I be undisturbed, the comings and goings of things, both for yourself and for others, can be a supportive practice for cultivating equanimity, for cultivating more equanimity in your life and heart. The thing I would recommend is again intimated in the various things that I've shared before, but really as an active process of using the other seven factors of being mindful, recognizing what is happening, having curiosity, interest, being intimate with experience, especially when it's difficult, not trying to push it away, but really gently turning towards, especially, you know, with sometimes actually pleasant experiences might be difficult to be with too, but whatever experience is, not turning away from, when you turn away from an experience, especially if it's difficult, it makes it harder to be with, acknowledge, work with, but turn towards. Really, the trick is to turn towards, ever so gently, turn towards. Can't emphasize that enough. No, for samadhi, no, it's not. But that's for samadhi, that's different.
Okay, that's for equanimity.
Yeah, that's right. This is for equanimity. I'm giving different principles. And the turning towards is really a wise turning towards. It's not a stewing in, for example, if there is anger. Like turning towards the energy, the feeling, the feeling of it in the body, the energy of it in the mind, not so much giving fuel to the self-righteousness of how I've been victimized and how I'm wrong, how, you know, how I'm right and they're wrong. Not turning towards it in that way, but turning towards it like, whew, this is what it feels like to be really angry. What does that really feel like? Or this is what's like to be really sad or agitated or whatever it is, turning towards, really turning towards. And getting in touch with it. Getting to know it again. I want to bring in sati. Really, sati is so powerful. Mindfulness, so powerful. And with that, giving it space and the spaciousness. You know, the space comes from the other factors. The space can come from when there is interest and curiosity, the sense of tranquility. Sense of tranquility and calm can bring space to be with. And asking, can I stay with this? Can I be with this too? Can I be with this? Can there be space? Can there be space? Can there be space of equanimity to be with this difficulty, whatever it is, not pushing it away, not wallowing in it, not identifying with it, becoming it. But can there be space? Just to breathe with it. Just to breathe with it. Just to be with it. Just to be with it. And the more we have capacity to be with, to stay with, the more our capacity for equanimity grows. And that is one definition of freedom in the moment. Freedom being with, not moved, not scared by, not pushed around by, not falling into identifying with, becoming, and not pushing away, not being scared of, not running away. Ah, freedom and ease in the midst of it all, in the middle of all this. That is freedom. That is liberation. It's Nibbana is not so far away, whatever, crazy, lighting up like a Christmas tree awakening. It's just these momentary freedoms, more and more freedom, which is why you can see the parallel perhaps between equanimity as the crown jewel of this practice. There can be a lot of freedom and equanimity. And it also connects with, I'll share one last thing, and also relates to emptiness. And I'm going to throw something, the deep end, before I wrap up. Leave it for your reflection. I'll share this from, this is from Master Zhuang, from 3rd century BC. I read, it's a quote. If someone, having lashed two hulls together, is crossing a river, and an empty boat happens along and bumps into them, no matter how hot-tempered the person may be, they will not get angry. But if there should be someone in the other boat, then they will shout out to haul this way or veer that. If their first shout is unheeded, they will shout again. And if that is not heard, they will shout a third time, this time with a torrent of curses following. In the first instance, they weren't angry. Now in the second, they are. Earlier, they faced emptiness. Now they face occupancy. If one could succeed in making themselves empty, and in that way wander through the world, then who could them harm? I think I would leave it at that.
Could I share a quote on equanimity?
Sure.
Thank you. This is from Buddha's Little Instruction Book by Jack Kornfield.
I'm not sure if that's on. Could you make sure?
I don't see a green light.
This is from Buddha's Little Instruction Book by Jack Kornfield. And I've had it on a card on my fridge for years, and it's pleasure and pain, gain and loss, fame and disrepute come and go like the wind. To be happy, stand like a great tree in the midst of it all.
Lovely equanimity phrase, thank you. From Master Jack. 20th century, 21st century. After. Great. So, thank you all for practicing together this morning. Let's take our lunch break now. It's 12:40. Let's come back at 1:40. And we will turn our attention to if there is more discussion, conversation about equanimity, we can do that this afternoon. And then as mentioned, we'll party with all the seven factors this afternoon, how they relate, what were your favorites, what confused you the most, what you didn't relate to really, what maybe makes sense now. Just we'll bring them all back for a grand finale before graduation. Enjoy your lunch.